Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, April 13th, 2017. The Pentagon says U.S. forces in Afghanistan dropped the military's largest non-nuclear bomb on an Islamic State target in Afghanistan. Pentagon spokesperson Adam Stump says it was the first ever combat use of the bomb, known as the GBU-43, which he said contains 11 tons of explosives. The Air Force calls it the Massive Ordnance Air Blast Bomb, MOAB, based on the acronym. It has been nicknamed the mother of all bombs. President Bush and President Obama both had access to the bomb, but it was Donald Trump who decided to use it. Stump says the bomb was dropped on a cave complex believed to be used by IS fighters, very close to the border with Pakistan. The military is currently assessing the damage. General John Nicholson, commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, signed off on the use of the bomb. At a news conference today with State Department spokesperson Mark Toner, a reporter tried to get at reasons for today's bombing.
Of course.
As far as the U.S. bombings in Afghanistan is concerned, it's not a big surprise to the high-level Afghan officials because they were here, advisor to the president of Afghanistan and also foreign minister of Afghanistan were here and speaking with the reporters and also at the think tanks. What they were saying that the terrorism problem in Afghanistan is being created by Pakistan. And all the terrorists are coming into Afghanistan and back and forth, because there is no check and balance and they are not holding them. My right. question is here that as far as this bombing to eliminate those ISIS and Talibans, is this because of those high-level officials who also met somebody here at the State Department? And also recently, you just issued a travel warning to Pakistan.
When you say this bombing, I think you're referring to the bombing that took place just a few hours ago.
That's right. Yes, sir.
The mother of all bombs.
Yeah, White House.
I just wanted to make sure I was on that. Look, a couple points. One is I'll refer you to what's already been said about this airstrike that took place in Afghanistan. I think it was aimed at a network of tunnels that was being used by terrorist organizations. I can't say that this was an immediate outcome of any conversations we had with the Afghan government. I think it's part of our ongoing efforts to take the fight to the Taliban, to take the fight to ISIS affiliates that are operating in that territory, Al-Qaeda affiliates that are operating on Afghan soil. And that's going to continue. You spoke about Pakistan and their role in this. We've been very clear. While we understand that Pakistan has made efforts to confront terrorism and terrorist organizations on its own soil, that there are still what we call safe havens that exist for terrorist groups to operate from and carry strikes out on Afghanistan. That's a problem. Again, it's in Pakistan's interest to work with constructively with Afghanistan to address those security concerns.
State Department spokesperson Mark Toner earlier today. Also today, the Pentagon said a U.S.-led strike this week didn't mean to kill 18 Allied fighters and wounding a number of others in Syria. The strike was intended to target IS militants, but instead killed Kurdish and Arab militia backed by Washington. U.S. Central Command said aircraft were given the wrong coordinates by partner forces. According to California Representative Barbara Lee on the House Appropriations Committee, the only action that should be taken is for the U.S. and the international community to call for a ceasefire, and she worries over an increase of ground troops in Syria.
If Trump really cared about the plight of Syrian children, I tell you, he would rescind his executive order banning Syrian refugees from coming to the U.S. and increase the amount that we take in. Instead of proposing to slash aid, which he's trying to do, cut UN funding, undermine diplomacy, and eliminate administration offices that deal with Syria and human rights. I'm on the subcommittee on appropriations that addresses and looks at these issues, and believe you me, his proposed budget cuts don't help Syrian children. They go in the direct opposite of what he purports to be trying to do with his military assaults and attacks. Combined with Trump's decision to reportedly, and this is what we're hearing, send nearly 1,000 U.S. ground troops to fight ISIS in eastern Syria, the strike on Assad's forces represents a dangerous and reckless escalation of U.S. military involvement in Syria's civil war. Sadly, it's clear that Trump has once again recklessly endangered America's security while potentially making the Syrian civil war even worse. It's so important to be the resistance and to continue to hold Trump accountable. We need a ceasefire, a humanitarian and safe corridor to allow food, medicine, and humanitarian supplies to reach the Syrian people. We need to develop a comprehensive strategy for a political settlement. We must encourage that, bringing in all partners in the region. And yes, we must accept 100,000 Syrian refugees into the United States.
This evening, just about now, New Yorkers are gathering in Union Square for a rally in support of Syrian women. One of the organizing arms of the resistance movement, the Women's March, says we mourn for and with the people of Syria. We are outraged that the president and his cabinet are banning the very refugees that are escaping the same terrorism we are claiming to fight. The U.S. has taken in a very small number of Syrian refugees. The Women's March is demanding that we be a sanctuary and safe haven for Syrian refugees, calling on the administration to let in at least 75,000. There is no easy solution, say the organizers of the Women's March, but providing Syrians with a life of safety and security is the least we can do. Again, the rally for Syrians is beginning about now in Union Square. Meanwhile, this afternoon at Trump Tower, protesters shouting "No ban, no wall" sat down in the middle of Trump Tower. Rebecca Miles has the story.
About three dozen protesters occupied the lobby of Trump Tower in Manhattan today to protest the administration's anti-immigrant policies. After protesters showered the lobby with leaflets, hung a banner from the mezzanine emblazoned with "No Raids," they staged a sit-in. Protesters then held aloft printed black signs with white lettering that read, "Take the path of most resistance, no person is illegal, no ban, no wall, claim freedom, and no raids." Dozens of New York police officers arrived and began arresting people inside, and at least five people were carried out of the building after being cuffed with plastic ties. Protesters read out their names as they were led to the paddy wagons and chanted, "No raids, no bans, no wall." Ray Black, who said he belonged to the direct action group called Rise and Resist, told NBC they'd been planning the protest weeks ago. According to its Facebook page, it was formed in response to the election of Trump, but it's not clear if it has any political affiliations. The protest comes the same week the U.S. Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, announced reforms and guidelines to strengthen immigration laws with the rapid hiring of additional judges for detention centers on the U.S.-Mexico border, increasing the penalty for those who re-enter the country from a misdemeanor to a felony, and powers to detain any adult crossing the border. The move comes as the Trump administration is considering spending $8 billion to $20 billion on a border wall along the 2,000 miles that separate the U.S. and Mexico as a deterrent to immigrant crossings, plus hiring an additional 5,000 Border Patrol officers. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
In other news, as Americans across the country file their tax returns, Donald Trump is being pressured to release his tax returns and divest from his hotels, resorts, and golf courses.
Donald Trump said he'd love to release his taxes.
And I'd like to release.
I would love to do that.
I have no objection to showing tax returns.
It just never seemed to be an appropriate time.
I'll be doing my tax returns at the appropriate time.
Yeah, at the appropriate time.
The appropriate time, you'll be very satisfied.
After all, it's no big deal because
you can't tell anything from tax returns.
You don't learn very much from a tax return.
But suddenly, there was a problem.
Oh, I can't do it until the audit is finished.
You never give a tax return when you're being audited.
Except that's exactly what Trump did when he wanted a casino from the New Jersey Casino Control Commission and the Nevada Gaming Control Board and to the gaming control boards of four other states. He gave them to banks when he needed a loan and to lawyers when he wanted to sue. So if he can show them his tax returns, why can't he show us?
I'll be honest, most people don't care about it.
guess again, Don. We care about it. Over 70% of America want to see his long-form taxes, and it's the most signed White House petition ever. So, on Saturday, April 15th, we're taking to the streets in over 150 cities to let everyone know the real reason he won't show his taxes. Not because of conflicts of interest, not because of ties to Russia. It's because he's a chicken. And since he's too busy guarding his nest egg, we'll be bringing our own Chicken Donalds. They, too, are filled with hot air. So go to taxmarch.org to get details and find a march near you. On April 15th, America's gonna grab Trump by the poultry. Bok, bok, bok.
That's from a video released by a coalition of resistance groups planning countrywide protests this Saturday, Tax Day, to tell Trump Americans care about his taxes and ask the question on social media with the hashtag, What Are You Hiding? For protests in our listening area, go to taxmarch.org. And other actions are planned regarding Trump and his taxes. Scott Goodstein is co-founder of Creative Majority PAC and Revolution Messaging. He's also with WhiteHouseInc.org.
We put up a website when Donald Trump said he was going to hold a press conference and divest from his business interests on December 15th. And we wanted to urge him to actually take that seriously, and the way to do that was we felt we would call the business interests of Donald Trump and ask them to make sure that he did indeed divest. So you can very simply go to WhiteHouseInc.org, enter your phone number, and we'll randomly call one of the satellite White House offices, as we'd like to call them. We just wanted to make it easy for the American public to call Trump's properties until he divests.
And so since the launch of WhiteHouseInc.org, you've connected 35,000 calls to Trump businesses protesting his failure to divest. Can you just tell us about this?
Sure. I mean, the biggest push on those calls was when the president took office and never turned on any type of public comment line. And so you go, wait a minute, now he's not divesting from his business, he's not showing us his tax return, and he's not even allowing the American public to have a phone call into the White House. And so we really pushed out amongst our friends, and then the website went viral. People were mad around sort of how could he possibly do all of these things? How could the president not want to divest from any conflict that he has? How could he not share his tax return so people don't think that he has some type of special interest or business dealing, and that's why he's making up his mind? And over 35,000 people called the different Trump properties. We've gotten cease and desist from the Trump properties, so we know that they've gotten these calls. But it is your public, our public right to push out public phone numbers and ask people to take an interest and call these properties and ask the management and the leadership of these properties to urge the family, the Trump family, to divest from these interests. And also, as kings and queens and other leaders around the country are going to Trump properties and holding meetings at Mar-a-Lago and Trump saying things around Mar-a-Lago is the White House South, we should be able to use the White House South as well. So we say have yourself a little Trump vodka and go to WhiteHouseInc.org and make a call.
So tell us how listeners can make those calls.
Sure. It's very simple. They can go to WhiteHouseInc.org and you'll get some tips and some information about positions that we feel that you should know, like the fact that different presidents for the last 40 years have all filed their tax returns and then shared them with the American public, that Nixon has shared his return with the American public. And very simply put, you can go to WhiteHouseInc.org, enter your phone number, and we will randomly connect you with one of the over 30 Trump properties around the United States to urge the Trump family to divest and tell Donald to share his taxes with the American public.
Scott Goodstein with WhiteHouseInc.org. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI, in New York. Meanwhile, Donald Trump signed a bill today which rolls back access to health care under Title 10. The nation's family planning program, Title 10, provides basic preventative health care for millions of people with low incomes or without health insurance. In 2015, Title 10 provided 800,000 pap tests, 1 million women with breast exams, and STI tests for 6 million. It provides cervical screening, HIV testing, birth control, and contraception education. Planned Parenthood says this latest move can embolden states to try and block access to health care through Title 10 across the board in both Planned Parenthood health centers and independent clinics. It says Republican leaders have spent the past 3 months trading away women's health and rights at every turn. In response, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman says the legislation signed by Trump today marks yet another regressive decision by men in Washington aimed at restricting a woman's fundamental right to make her own reproductive health choices. Schneiderman says, I was proud to lead a coalition of attorneys general in filing an amicus brief against the Ohio state law that would defund Planned Parenthood and other health care providers. He says he will continue to do all he can to protect women's fundamental reproductive rights, no matter what happens in Washington. In other news, although the Republican effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, failed in the House of Representatives, the issue is not dead, and healthcare advocates say suggested changes to the new American Healthcare Act would cost New Yorkers even more than the original bill. Andrea Sears reports.
Republicans in Congress have been drafting a new bill to replace the Affordable Care Act. Opponents say that, like the American Health Care Act, or AHCA, that failed last month, the new bill would give tax breaks to the rich, take health care away from 24 million Americans, slash Medicaid, and raise health care costs. Elizabeth Benjamin, co-founder of Health Care for All New York, says it would be bad for the country and even worse for New York.
The budgetary impact on New York State would total nearly $7 billion in the first 4 years alone, causing a loss of coverage, jobs, and other negative impacts on New Yorkers.
Republicans say their bill would return control of health care to the states and restore the free market. But Benjamin says 2.7 million New Yorkers would lose coverage. According to Helen Schaub with 1199 SEIU, one amendment to the bill sponsored by two New York Republicans would affect New York alone by withholding federal funds from the state equal to the amount of Medicaid costs the state shifts to counties.
So it was essentially a $2.3 billion cut to Medicaid financing in the state, which we know would have very significant consequences.
She adds that a study by George Washington University found New York would lose 33,000 jobs under the AHCA as healthcare institutions dealt with the loss of funding. Benjamin notes that before the Affordable Care Act, there were only 19,000 people enrolled in New York's individual insurance market. With Obamacare, that increased to 360,000 and premiums dropped an average of 53%.
Under their proposal, not only will those premium reductions be wiped out, we can expect to see 15 to 20% or more premium increases.
On Tuesday, President Trump once again said repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act is a top legislative priority. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
In other news, this week a judge ruled that Republican lawmakers in Texas deliberately designed a strict voter ID law to disadvantage minorities and effectively dampen their growing electoral power. Meanwhile, here in New York, legislators and voting rights activists are speaking out about voter suppression in our own backyard. Armand Echeverry reports.
According to Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer, outdated voting laws are suppressing the vote.
There are 1.6 million Manhattanites, but only 1 million are registered to vote. And less than 700,000 Manhattanites voted last year, this year, and only 600,000 in 2012. And in local elections, which is this year, mayor, controller, borough president, city council, less than 300,000 voted in 2013 out of the 1 million who are registered. This is New York, folks. This is not a good picture. our outdated voting laws in New York are really a voter suppression machine in the state of New York.
And it's not just voting machines which are causing problems. According to Susan Lerner with Common Cause, early voting and voter registration reform will go a long way to increase the number of people who vote in New York State.
We need in this climate to make it perfectly clear that the problem is not too many ineligible people voting. Voter fraud is a myth. The problem is it's too hard for the eligible Americans to get to the ballot. So here in New York, we need to be an example for how to do elections right in the 21st century, not an excuse for voter suppression in other places.
We should enable people to vote by absentee ballot without a reason for absentee. Just vote by mail.
Congressmember Jerry Nadler represents New York's 10th Congressional District.
Vote by mail is as Oregon does.
Yeah.
Allow voting and allow early voting. Shouldn't have to be on election day. Anytime within 2 weeks, you could easily do that. You can open up the polls and you can allow mail balloting. This is what a modern system would do. And we have, there are no fraud issues and no protection issues. Now we know there are plenty of phony fraud issues that are being brought up by various politicians who do not want people to vote, crying voter fraud, voter ID, all this crap. That's simply a reprise of the 19th century campaigners who didn't want to let people vote at all, who didn't want a secret ballot. We have to have a democratic country with a small d. I'd like to see it with a large d too, but it's certainly with a small d. And that means we ought to have automatic voter registration, we ought to have early voting, and we ought to have that in New York.
Other issues that decrease the voter turnout derive from time-constraint issues such as aggressive deadlines and a stringent process that makes it difficult for voters to be registered in time and the lack of early voting sites. Armand Echeverry, WBAI News, New York.
In other news, Pope Francis traveled to an Italian prison dedicated to housing mafia turncoats today to wash the feet of 12 inmates. It's the third Holy Thursday that Francis spent at a detention center, part of his longstanding emphasis on ministering to prisoners and giving them rehabilitation and hope. The Vatican says two of the 12 inmates chosen for the ceremony are serving life terms, while the others have release dates between 2019 and 2073. In Toronto, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government introduced legislation today to let adults possess 30 grams of pot in public, a measure that would make Canada the largest developed country to end a nationwide prohibition on recreational marijuana. Trudeau has long promised to legalize recreational pot use and sales. U.S. voters in California, Massachusetts, Maine, and Nevada voted last year to approve the use of recreational marijuana. They joined Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska. The South American nation of Uruguay is the only nation to legalize recreational pot. The proposed law allows four plants to be grown at home. Those under 18 found with small amounts of pot would not face criminal charges. Officials said Canadians should be able to smoke marijuana legally by July 1st of 2018. The federal government set the age at 18, but it's allowing each of Canada's provinces to determine if it should be higher. Canadian youth have higher rates of cannabis use than their peers worldwide. While the government moves to legalize pot, retail outlets selling it for recreational use have already been set up. Trudeau has emphasized current laws should be respected. Police in Toronto, Vancouver, and other cities raided stores earlier last month, and they did make some arrests. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.